You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
What do you imagine when you think of the term wilderness? Is it a barren desert type of environment with tumbleweeds and sagebrush and cacti, or is it something that's almost otherworldly, like the Borrego Badlands? Or are you a person that when you think of this concept of wilderness, who might instead imagine dense forests and wild mountains and alpine expanses? Or are you a person for whom wilderness is much more of a metaphor than it is a geographical location, a wilderness where there are feelings of isolation, of not being understood, or being fully appreciated, and those are the things that capture you the most? Wilderness obviously can mean a lot of things to us that are both geographical and metaphorical. Jesus went into the wilderness where for 40 days, he was tempted by the devil. Well, the gospel writers, at least three of them, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all tell of his retreat to the desert and the ensuing temptation that took place. These three writers, some of them more, some of them a little bit less, show Jesus being offered absolutely everything, all power, if he would simply veer from the path which appeared to be his destiny. Well, as each of the gospel writers tells us, he did not succumb. At the same time, we also really didn't hear much else about what filled those 40 days when he was in the desert. But it seems safe to say, I imagine, that there was a good deal of prayer and a good deal of reflection which took place. Well, this wilderness experience of Jesus has certainly captured the imagination of his followers for longer than can be remembered. It seems safe to say that it is indeed something with which most people also can resonate with at one time or another, being in the wilderness. It's a really powerful symbol. Sometimes we even think that there is a need to be in the wilderness because it eventually serves to be a rite of passage. Being in the wilderness is often associated with a time when perhaps we gain new insight or we find a new purpose for life. At the very least, we like to believe that when we are in a wilderness, we emerge from it becoming more self-aware. And there is an assumption that if we have been at all reflective during our season or maybe seasons of wilderness, we will emerge as a changed person. Well, it shouldn't be a surprise to us that this text about the wilderness is the way the church always begins this season of Lent. We look at this passage pretty much every year. Now, as I look around the room today, I imagine there's a wide variety of experience when it comes to Lent, what it means and how we observe it. Now, some of us who had Roman Catholic heritage might have a very specific memory of what it meant that during Lent you were supposed to give something up. Who of us here maybe came out of that kind of background and we remember that there was something that we needed to give up? Perhaps our recollection of Lent was growing up in elementary schools, and when you went to the church cafeteria, what was always served on Friday? That's right. That's something that still is ingrained in us. And in fact, Linda and I were commenting the other day, even though many Protestant churches didn't really observe Lent, the fish fry on Friday was a real common thing in days past. Others of us may have had really next to no experience with any kind of spiritual practice or observance during the season of Lent. Or sometimes the common experience is a memory that if you were in church, things tended to get a lot more depressing during the Lenten season. because that was the time you had a lot of dark hymns in minor keys. I provided that for you this morning, in case you hadn't noticed. And there are lots of deep, dark stories, and it's often a time for confession, and that might be the thing that we remember, that this is kind of a tough season in the life of church. Well, that's not such a bad thing sometimes, is it? Again, there is the expectation that because we've gone through this Lenten discipline, this season, the practice, that we hope we will emerge as different people. Well, there really is a sound reason for having Lent, because it's all about contrasts. You see, Easter joy makes a lot more sense. Think about it, when we have lived through a season of Lent, when we have walked through the wilderness, when we have had to walk with Jesus through the events of Holy Week and eventually the miracle of the empty tomb. Yes, it is about contrasts. Easter joy, unless there's contrast, doesn't really make much sense. And believe it or not, long and long ago in the church's history, that same logic surrounded the seasons of Advent and Christmas, the other big cycle of the church year. Whether we believe it or not, Advent was theoretically a penitential season, although we probably wouldn't know it from all the hall decking and merrymaking and passing of presents. Easter has seemed in the church to hold its own a little bit better. And I guess it's because the bunny is not nearly as compelling as Santa, right? So as I was preparing for the Lenten season this year at Christmas time, I kept focusing on this image of wilderness that emerges in this text. But for me, it was not a wilderness that was a barren, hostile place. Instead, my imagination went to the places I've been where the definition of wilderness was that it was a place where human beings were out of place, a place where we weren't really supposed to be there. And that could equally be the case in the middle of a desert or on the top of a mountain or even sitting by a brook in the midst of a meadow. I was thinking about what it is that happens to each of us when we remove ourselves from the everyday and the pressures that go with the everyday. And I realized, at least for me, that wilderness is not such a bad thing. It's a time where perhaps we have our flights of fancy, our fantasies, our dreams, but it also can be a really important time when we ask questions. Lots and lots of questions. Sometimes those questions are frivolous. Sometimes those questions are very deep. Sometimes when we ask those questions, the result is insight. Sometimes when we ask the questions, the result is painful recognition that things just aren't right. The bottom line is, I believe the wilderness is a place to which we are called. A place to explore, a place to ask questions. It's a place, ultimately, where we can grow. And as I said before, I bet Jesus had plenty of questions when he was in the wilderness for those 40 days. Well, we live in a time and a place, friends, when there certainly are a lot of questions being asked, right? The last 4 months have been a time of great transition and change for our nation. Some might suggest we were absolutely caught off guard, not prepared, and regardless of what any of us might think, there is a huge amount of collective angst. Ask any psychologist today, and they will give you an earful. Let's face it, there are a lot of unanswered questions in front of us, and they are causing high anxiety. It's no different in this institution, in this place that we call the church. We are experiencing change at a speed to which we are not accustomed. Institutional leaders did not want to ever believe that the norms that were the church of the 1950s, the 1960s, and the 1970s would ever change. They assumed everyone would always want to be in church because that's just something you did. Well, we know that's not the case. We also know that doesn't mean that people do not have deep spiritual questions about life and meaning and purpose. but they question whether the church is the place to find those answers. We know that the old standard answers, the black and white theologies and doctrines and dogmas, are viewed with great suspicion in this day and age. And guess what? We're right to view them with suspicion. You see, institutional church is a creation of empire. And Jesus' ministry had absolutely nothing to do with empire building. But friends, that's exactly what has happened. So as I was thinking about what might be the questions we ask during this Lenten season, I wondered, what if we skip asking any questions whatsoever about the empire, the church, and instead our questions for these weeks focus on what it means to follow Jesus and how that impacts our thoughts about ourselves, the world in which we live, our thoughts about God, and what the motivations are for our actions from day to day. In other words, what are the faith basics that we need to be talking about? What are the real questions for our time and our day? So that's what we're going to do for these next several weeks. And our first question is a real simple one. Who? Just a very straightforward, simple question. Who? And that's what comes from our text this morning when the question was asked of Peter, who do they say that I am? And furthermore, who do you say that I am? And when you think about it, it really does make sense to start there. It is the place to start, focusing on Jesus and just who we think Jesus is. Now, we know Peter's response to the question that was recorded by the gospel writer. You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And it seems clear, and it seems concise, and it seems straightforward. But not surprisingly, it has been the source of an incredible amount of theological bickering and posturing and head-scratching ever since that comment was made. It seems straightforward. But our interpretation of it is anything but straightforward. You see, friends, part of the problem is that our biblical text, as well as our church tradition, is really not always clear on this subject. We don't like to say that because we like to believe that when we say we're a follower of Jesus, or if we say we're a Christian, that we know exactly what we're talking about and we always believe the same thing. And that's just not the case. Believe it or not, and I'm sure it's no surprise to you, that those people who like to talk about these things in real heady ways have had major, major disagreements. In fact, theologians, they have a whole area of study that they call Christology, which is basically an attempt to try to define who this person of Jesus is and what his reality is. How do we make sense of it? And there has been much that has been written and much that has been debated. And in the process of trying to decide just who Jesus is, and more importantly, who is right about who Jesus is, many have been cast aside, labeled as heretics, and in the history books have been given quite a bad rap. Well, one of the things we need to remember is that dissenters are almost always in the minority. And there is, of course, with that, this problem that's always before us. Our knowledge that just because a majority believes something doesn't mean that it's right. I want us to pause and just think for a moment. Can you think of situations where a majority of people have believed something and it was just outright wrong, sometimes evil? Let's pause and just ruminate on that. When and where have we seen that? When we think about our world, we're really clear that our sacred and our secular history is littered, absolutely littered, with never-ending examples of how the majority got it wrong. One thing that's pretty clear for us today in the time in which we live is that the way we look at Jesus is far removed from the vantage point of his first followers. To them, he was a teacher. He was a miracle worker. But there's a real question before us. Did they view him as divine? You see, the notion of the triune God appeared nowhere in that early teaching. In fact, that was something that wasn't determined till a much later date in our Christian history, generation after generation, century after century, after the time of Jesus. So the response at that particular point in time, the response of Peter that you are the Messiah, well, it had a really clear meaning that really is not necessarily our understanding of the meaning of the word Messiah. You see, for the ancient Jews, the Messiah would be a great political leader who would bring renewal to Judah, who would restore it to its days of greatness, just as it was under the kingship of David. The problem, of course, that we've been living with for almost 2,000 years is that, at least from a Jewish perspective, Jesus as Messiah made no sense whatsoever. And so from the first days, we have been left with this challenge of how we understand all of this teaching about Jesus being divine and Jesus being human and Jesus being a combination, this person who understands who we are, yet is God and is with us, but on the other hand is right here, yet is above it all. Have you ever asked any of those questions when you're trying to settle out this person of Jesus? I have. Well, to his followers, Jesus was a real man, something very earthy. And then where some of the confusion started to set in for us is that to Paul, Jesus was more this cosmic, heavenly reality that transcended earthly boundaries, and there was no longer this real sense of humanness. And so in the time ever since that, in the centuries, the questions have continued. Some branches of the church are absolutely emphatic about his being the Son of God, fully human, fully divine, like we are really supposed to understand what that means. Have you ever had a question about what this Trinity thing means? Be honest with ourselves. Others may focus very heavily on Jesus' role and that he had to die for us because we were completely separated from God, that we could never attain God. And the problem with that is it is far removed from the belief that what God created was good, or what we talk about oftentimes as original blessing. So you see, we've done a great job as the church trying to confuse ourselves over time to make sense of who is this Jesus. So what do we do with that? Well, some might say, well, why don't we just abandon Jesus altogether? Well, the one thing I will say is we don't have that choice. If we consider our identity to be Christian or to be follower of Jesus, however we want to name it, Jesus is a part of that equation. We don't have the choice to just set Jesus aside, nor do we have this choice to set aside Jesus' teaching, especially when it makes us feel really uncomfortable. So one of the things that I like to go back to when I'm trying to make sense of this is what was said in the letter to the Hebrews. And you might remember this passage where Jesus was referred to as the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith. The pioneer and the perfecter of our faith. In other words, he set into motion through his teaching a choice as to how we might passionately live our lives. A choice that we believe is in harmony with all of this marvelous creation. All of this being a part of what we might even on a bigger scale call we're all a part of God. And Jesus' message of love was more important than anything else that we might hear. Well, friends, I'm going to leave us on a cliff today, because I'm not going to answer the question. For some of you, that may be absolutely infuriating, but the more I think about it, the more we really can't answer this question, because, see, that's part of the problem as the church. We have tried to say absolutely who is Jesus, when the reality who is Jesus is a very, very intensely personal question. Because who Jesus is going to differ with every person in this room. The important thing is, though, we need to start asking that question. We need to willingly go into the wilderness. It will not be an easy journey. And it's not going to be a place of easy answers. But I believe when we take ourselves into the wilderness, we emerge as changed people. So is God calling us to that wilderness to ask the question, who is Jesus? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.